Why is it that you think some people like fear? Why do you think some people like that? I mean, you're the person who has a finger on the marketing pulse of it, so.
Yeah, it's camaraderie.
Oh, geez. Wow.
Like, have you ever
Crap.
been in a pity party?
Yeah.
Right. So if you're feeling a certain type of way, we all have that friend that'll get in a pity party with us, right?
Yeah.
Feel sorry for us, or we'll call them, well, you know what happened to me on the road today? Like, that's the friend you call for that, because they'll meet you with
Nobody
that
ever
energy.
calls me for that.
Because you're not that type of person, right? You're not. You're about the solution,
Yeah.
which is the same with me, right? I don't get those calls because they last about 4 minutes. And my advice to them is never really what they want to hear.
Yeah. Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candace Rodarte, and today I'm joined by Leonard Shiner. Leonard is CEO of Geek House, a renowned law firm marketing agency based in Los Angeles. With a decade of experience, Leonard has been instrumental in developing branding strategies, driving new client acquisition, and ensuring predictable revenue growth for law firms and professional service businesses. Armed with an MBA from Pepperdine University and a wealth of in-house law firm expertise, Leonard's frameworks and tactics have generated millions of dollars in new business for his clients. Join us as Leonard shares his insights on topics such as branding, effective marketing systems, and the future of digital marketing for law firms. Welcome, Leonard.
Hi, Candace. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I love your niche. I love how narrow your niche is. I'm constantly preaching narrow niche, narrow niche, narrow niche. And I love that you narrowed your niche. So tell us your story. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, it's kind of a funny story, but kind of a regular story. Kid goes to university, kid gets internship, kid loves what he does and sticks around. But that's the short version of it. So I didn't know that I was getting into law firm marketing when I decided to get into law firm marketing. I was my first year at university and I got into an internship. This was many, many, many years ago, right? But that was really the start. And I fell in love with it. I loved that I got to be creative, but that I also got to do it within structure. So I always say I love organized chaos, like a party with a whole bunch of people, right? But like dinner served at one time and drinks are at another and desserts at another. And so I really liked that organized chaos. And so being able to market something that was going to help people was also attractive to me. I didn't want to go out and, you know, market the latest Instagram product, or, you know, TikTok wasn't a thing back then, but, you know, the latest TikTok product, that wasn't really my goal. As a young entrepreneur, I wanted to help people. And that's still true today, is I want to help people. I believe that we're here to be in support and to help people. So I went from an intern to a marketing manager to a marketing director. And then my in-house experience being, you know, inside law firms doing marketing, I got to see a lot. I got to see bankruptcy marketing. I got to see litigation marketing. I got to see divorce marketing. I got to see what we're all familiar with, which is personal injury marketing. And so whether we're focused on getting an individual, a consumer, or getting a business, business to business, either type of client, I was exposed to it. And so I really was in the trenches. And I love that because when I speak about something now, it's not what you hear from these online gurus. It's tried, tested, battle-tested methods and tactics that get us to the end result. So I ended my in-house law firm portion of my career as the CMO of an international firm. And I loved it. But I looked at, what am I doing every day, right? I had my window office on Wilshire Boulevard in Beverly Hills. I could see the Hollywood sign. And I was like, one day, just this is not what it should feel like, you know, having checked off the boxes that you would think I should feel differently. So my true calling was being an agency owner and helping individuals be able to get themselves further and helping many of them at the same time, versus when you're an employee, all your focus is on that one brand, that one company, that one firm. And so I love that I've got the freedom that I do today.
You did something extremely scary for a lot of people. you went from that cushy window office with the great view to doing your own thing, which meant that you had to find your own office space and you had to hire your own team, which meant that you had to have some cojones. So talk about that process.
Yeah. When you're leaving a stable job, right? We'll call it, you know, here in the States, it's your W-2 job, your employee job. When you're leaving that, your first question is, can I survive? That's your first, right? Like, can I go into the market and can I make enough income for myself to be able to pay my bills and put food on my table and food on the floor for my dog, right? Like, that's your goal. And so I quickly learned that that was possible. And what I learned during that process was that if a company is willing to pay you X amount, they're getting more than that back from you. Otherwise, why would you be there, right? So let's just say they're paying you $100,000. They're at least making $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 based off of your efforts. So if you think that you can't go out into the marketplace and do better earning for yourself than you could in a job, I you know, respectfully disagree and want to kind of pick that apart, because it might be scary. It might be outside your comfort zone. It might be something you've never done before, but that's where the growth happens. And I'm so not a proponent of burning the boats. We've all heard that expression where it's like, if you're going to do something, just jump and do it. Look, I'm not about that. Why are you going to go crazy, right? Like, I would be completely gray right now if that was what I did. But there's a process, you know, but you learn and you grow during that process.
So I had an opposite story. I literally quit my job and walked out of the office. Like, I was done and I just left. Like, I didn't give notice. I just left. But, you know, it takes, that means that there was an extreme situation and I was done with it. Right. But you know what? Things worked out. So you can have a plan or you could not have a plan. But if you have a purpose and a vision, things will work out.
Yeah. I have colleagues who have done just what you did and it works out fine. You know, when we're put in situations where our human kicks in and we're really good at figuring out the problem to, or the solution to a problem.
Yeah.
At that moment.
Well, if you're hungry, you figure out how to feed yourself.
Very sure.
You know. Okay. So let's talk about the intricacies of marketing in such a specific niche as law, because you listed a whole bunch of different types of law and some of them feel really sleazy. Like, you know, sometimes your skin crawls when you see a commercial and then sometimes you're like, oh yeah, maybe I think I would hire that guy. Right. So talk about that.
Well, I think there's a lot of connotation that's in legal marketing and that it's like, if you don't hire us, you're going to be in pain. Or if you don't hire us, these bad things are going to happen. And although that might be true, it's based on fear marketing. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't really motivate me. It might motivate me to take an action, but not take an action with that person. So whether it's, you know, we're looking at law firm sales or marketing, we're approaching it from the place of service. How are we serving this client or potential client? And so whether they've signed our agreement and they're actually a client, or if they've not yet, and we're still kind of in that engagement stage, they're a potential client, we're still going to serve them to varying degrees, but we're still going to serve them. So what I always share with my clients, my agency clients who are lawyers and law firms, is that even before they become a client, we need to show them who we are, and then we need to be there at enough frequency that they start building a relationship. So in this modern world, there's a lot of noise, right? There's like a new Clubhouse was what, a year or two ago. Now there's TikTok. Like, there's always something new for us to
Threads
just launched. That's a great one. Yeah. So that was what, last week, the week before?
Well, it would have been a couple of months ago, but yeah.
Right. So Threads just launched a couple of months ago. Yep. And so there's always something new. And us as humans, we only have a certain amount of mental bandwidth, right? Our attention space. And so we want to take up attention in the minds of our potential client, whether that's content, whether that's emails, whether that's a smile and dial phone call, whether that's an audio message that we send via text or email. Doesn't really matter the medium. That's kind of a part two conversation, but we need to be in relationship with them. And through that relationship, they will feel comfortable enough to show up for the consultation, build a relationship, and then sign and hire or sign.
Before we started this conversation on air, we were talking about greeting cards. Greeting cards open a door. I mean, they really do. You send a thank you card to somebody just for taking the phone call, and they will be more than happy to want to have the next conversation with you or to hire you. Because nobody, it's 3% of businesses send greeting cards. That means you are doing something that 97% of businesses aren't doing if you're doing that one little thing. And it's not very expensive. It's a very affordable extra personal touch, you know, and you, like you said, the more touches, the better.
And it's in a different medium too, right? Mm-hmm. So they're getting that tangibly through the actual mail.
Yeah. Whether or not you actually write it out by hand or it comes through a service, you know, it's still something that no one else is doing.
Yeah.
You know, that was a tangent. That was
a great tangent because, because when we're looking at getting people to hire, we've got to meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you're like a 22 year old and you're trying to hire an attorney for something that's happening, you're going to be all email and text, right?
Yeah.
But if you're a 60, 70 year old person hiring an attorney, you're going to be phone calls. You're going to be mail it to me. You might be some email, you might be some text, but it's a totally different pace.
Yeah.
And so when I work with a law firm, I'm looking at a few things. I'm looking at like, what are the target clients that we're going after? And maybe it's one set, or maybe there's a few sets of target clients.
Well, yeah, I mean, back to niche, your niche is law firms, but their niche is whatever their niche is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even within the legal niche, you've got a lot of different practice areas, right? And so a bankruptcy attorney is not the same as a divorce attorney. And even within divorce attorney, right? It's like, okay, are you, well, let's take bankruptcy because it's easier to understand. So with bankruptcy, you've got personal bankruptcy and then you've got corporate bankruptcy. Those are different messages.
Yeah.
Right. I've got a client and they do divorce, not exclusively, but probably 85% of their business is military divorces.
Wow.
They are the expert in that, right?
So that's got to be a serious niche because there are some benefits that military spouses have that spouses don't get in anywhere else.
Very true. So,
yeah. I mean, my grandmother, her husband was her second husband was the officer in the Navy, and she had healthcare for the rest of her life through the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was taken care of for the rest of her life. So yeah, that's something that doesn't happen in any other industry.
Well, and they're professionals, right? They've got their JD, their equivalency of a doctorate. They're intelligent people. They're analytical people. I'm talking about the category of attorneys, and they're great at that. But then I get to pair with them and say, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
What is the message? I hear this coming out of your mouth, but that doesn't make any sense to them. So let's put it through, you know, this filter. And then now we've got something that actually lands the communication
with
your target client.
That is so important. Yeah, you're talking legalese and another lawyer might understand what you're saying, but your client doesn't understand what you're saying at all.
Right.
They just want to know how you're going to fix it. You know, and you went back to earlier, you talked about nobody wants to talk about being afraid, but we don't want to hear about being afraid, but we are. Right. And we just want somebody to make us feel better. So we want to hear solutions.
So I'm really glad that you brought this back up because fear-based marketing is really a turnoff for most people. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we all have fear. Otherwise, we would just do the thing that we needed to do. Right. That's where procrastination can stem from and a whole host of other things. So that fear, when we're crafting a message, and I love this part. It's like untangible communication details. So when we're crafting that message to a potential client and we're in conversation with them, whether it's through a card or through an email, we're going to put fear in there somewhere, but it's going to not be at the top. It's going to be more towards the 70, 80% because we need to bring it real.
Yeah.
But we're putting it at a different place.
I want to hear solutions. I don't want to hear fear.
Right.
Right. Politics is a great example. I don't want to hear a politician tell me how terrible things are. I want to hear a politician tell me what they're going to do to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And when a politician tells me what they're going to do to make it better, and I believe that they can do it, that's who's going to get my vote, right? But other people kind of feed into the fear. They like it, you know? And do you want to get existential here? Why is it that you think some people like fear? Why do you think some people like that? I mean, you're the person who has a finger on the marketing pulse of it. So
yeah, it's camaraderie.
Oh, geez. Wow.
Like, have you ever been in a pity party?
Yeah. Right?
So if you're feeling a certain type of way, we all have that friend that'll get in a pity party with us.
Yeah. Right?
Feel sorry for us, or we'll call them. You know what happened to me on the road today? Like, that's the friend you call for that, because they'll meet you.
Nobody ever calls me for that.
Because you're not that type of person, right? You're not. You're about the solution,
yeah.
Which is the same with me, right? I don't get those calls because they last about 4 minutes. And my advice to them is never really what they want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I want to pivot because I want to have a very important conversation that's in your realm of genius. So I've been in business over 30 years, and I have always heard that your marketing budget should be 25% of your revenue. Share your genius with me. Is that still true? What has it ever been true?
So I think there's a lot of chatter from gurus out there that give formulas without looking under the hood of who they're prescribing it for. And like any good doctor or surgeon, you're going to do your own research and testing before you operate or prescribe something. And so just, you know, painting with a broad brush of saying 25% needs to be marketing, I would not agree with that. So it's going to vary depending on whether your audience is a business space, right? Whether you're a B2B model or whether you're a consumer model, very different, right? We also need to look at what is the goal? Is the goal for you to...
Well, let's just look at this for a minute. And then I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just think about it. So most of the people listening, they probably do $100,000 a year in revenue for their business because it's a, you know, this is a small business show. 25% of $100,000 is $25,000. Mm-hmm. For a $100,000 business, $25,000 is a lot of money. If the business does $100 million a year, that's $2.5 million, which isn't a lot of money for, no, it's 25. Do the math for me. Is it 25? I said 100 million, 25 million. 25 million is still a lot of money, but it's not a lot. It's not as much when you're dealing with 100 million, right? It's not as big of a stretch because there's still a lot more money there. So I wanted to just interject that because I thought it was important.
Yeah. Well, but the question really remains is it 25% of your gross revenue or 25% of your profit, right? Because that could be very different. You could be at $100,000 business, but maybe, I don't know, half or 30% or 70% or depending on where you are and what you're doing. Your profit taking away from there might be very much so less than that 100,000. And so 25% of your profit is going to look very different than 25% of your gross. And so looking at budgetary wise, I like to look at like, what do we want to do? How do we want to grow? So I'm kind of answering the question of should it be 25% with kind of a back-end solution, but I'm looking at, okay, what do we want to grow? Do we want to double the business in the next year? First of all, is that even possible? But if it is possible, do we want to double that? Most of the businesses that I work with are solo to medium size firms. And so doubling it would mean that they would have to hire additional staff and all of this stuff because they personally can't do it all themselves. So while that might be great and something that they want to do, usually that's not what I'm hearing. I'm usually hearing we want consistent incremental growth. I've got X number of new clients coming in. I want to increase that by 10% this month and maybe 10% the next month. And so we're looking at a quarterly growth of about 20%. Okay, like that's the conversation that we start with. And then from there, we're like, what are the tactics that we're going to use to get that growth? Okay, we're going to take a podcast guesting strategy. We're going to take a PR strategy. We're going to take a pay-per-click strategy, whatever that might be. And we're looking at the potential growth that's coming back from that. So if you're going to tell me it's 25 grand, okay, how much, what am I getting back from that, right? Like, never mind the fact, can we afford it budgetary-wise? It's the cost of the money I'm not really as concerned with. I'm more concerned about the growth that's going to come for that, right? I was just as a tangent, I was listening to a podcast just the other day, and it was a real estate podcast. And he was talking about how the money, the cost of money has risen, right? We all know interest rates have risen. And he was saying with a hard lender, the interest rate is more than with a regular bank. But I don't care about the cost of the money if I'm still positive with what I'm putting it into. So when we look at a budget for marketing, there is no, in my professional opinion, there's no hard and fast, it should be X number percent of this or that or this. It's really, what is the return that we're going to go after? And if I can put $500, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, if I can put that towards some marketing effort, and I'm going to get back, what's my ROI? So I'm not looking at cash out, I'm looking at ROI. If I can put $1,000 out and get $4,000 back, or double my money and get $2,000 back, that's a good marketing decision. And then we look at how do we optimize that? How do we squeak out every last drip of juice that we can? But just having a hard and fast percentage, yeah, probably not where we want to be.
I also think time is an important factor in that ROI. It's not just when am I going to make 10 times my investment, but it's also how long am I willing to wait to make that 10 times the investment. Mm-hmm. And some people aren't patient. Mm-hmm. I'm a long-termer. I'm very patient, but some people aren't. Interesting. I love that. It is all about ROI is everything. It really is. And it's about doing things that are a little bit different too. Because if everybody else is doing fear-based marketing, then you should be doing solution-based marketing because it'll make you different.
We look at education and entertainment-based marketing.
Ooh.
So put them together.
Let's talk about that.
Edutainment.
I love it.
Edutainment.
All right. What does that look like?
Well, every attorney, every lawyer, every listener who's listening right now is unique from their competitor. Even if you think that you spin the same wheel as the guy or gal next to you, you don't. They might walk out with the same product or service, but the way that you deliver it, the way that you client manage, the way that you construct the project, it's all going to be different, right? So I experience this a lot with immigration attorneys, because in immigration, people are looking for that green card. They're looking for that visa. They're looking for that one thing. And so really it's commoditized, because you could go to any firm of 50 of the firms in town and end up with the same result. That's very different than if you're in like a negotiation or a dispute and you want that person to negotiate with you or for you, right? Like you're looking based on talent versus in some places in legal, it's commodity and you're looking for that end result. And so when I'm speaking with an immigration attorney, I will often hear, yeah, but the market, I can't charge that much.
Wow.
I can't do that because of that. And it's always dependent upon the market. And while that might be true in the short run, in the long run, if we can position you as the authority, as the go-to person, as the expert for, again, niching down, which I love that you love, if we can get specific, that's how you're going to set yourself apart. So the edutainment part of marketing that we do for our clients comes in when we're blending that education part. We're telling them about what they need to know, right? There's a little bit of fear in there because bad things could happen, but that's not the whole message. So we're educating them about the facts.
Yeah.
Did you know XYZ, right? And then on the entertainment side of things, this is where the fun happens. So we really get to dive into that person, that expert, that attorney, and say, great, what is your story? What is your unique view on things? Like, how are you different than the train that's already on the tracks rolling? Like, how are you different in any bit of way? And so from a conversation, we'll usually pull out a handful of items that are really great for a professional brand. And from there, we start sharing their personality. So that's the entertainment part. And then the education part is the facts. So when we blend those together, whether it's in a video or a blog or an email, we're communicating in a way that feels natural because we're a human. We have a personality. That's the entertainment part. But then we're also informing them. So we all get emails that are just always selling, right? We don't like those. But we all have a few people that when we get an email from them, we're like, I'm going to learn something. I'm going to get that 10 tidbit, right? That's why I'm on a newsletter list from Bob or Joe, because they send me weekly updates and I learn little snippets here and there. So we want to do that because that's going to get them inching towards crossing the line of becoming a client.
Well, education is really important because sometimes perception and reality are not the same. You're talking about immigration attorney. I went to college. I'm one of those people who goes to college to take classes because I'm a geek, not because I wanted a degree. So I've felt like I think I'll take a class on anthropology this year just to do something fun, like an adult, you know. So I took a class. I was taking a class in anthropology just to do something fun for me because I find that fun. This was 15 years ago. And the woman sitting next to me had a British accent or New Zealand accent. I cannot remember. And she was about my age. She might have been a little bit older than me. And her story was really tragic. I'm just going to say she was from New Zealand. All right. She was from New Zealand. Her husband was from Canada. They had lived in Malaysia. Her husband had a job in Malaysia, and that's where they had lived, and that's where their children had been born. They now lived in Texas, right? Her husband died. He was Canadian. She was from New Zealand. Their children were born in Malaysia. They were being deported. Her children were in school in the United States, and they were about to be deported. And she didn't have any place to go because she had lived in Malaysia, and her husband was from Canada, and she was from New Zealand. She had no place to take her and her children. She had no home base to go to. So that her immigration attorney said, get a student visa and go back to college. But that is not what people think of when they think of immigration attorneys. Mm-mm. They don't know that you're going to get deported if your husband and you are not from the United States and your husband dies and you've got 6 weeks to get out of the country. After your husband, they don't know that that is what immigration means. They have a perception of what immigration means, and that's not what it is. So that's a story. I mean, that is a story that needs to be told. I hope a lot of people hear that story. You want to talk about that?
Well, if that was a client of ours, we would use that story to build a relationship, right? Even if it's not something that happened recently. How long ago did that happen? Years and years ago, right?
At least 15 years ago.
But that story is so good, right? So if I was an immigration attorney, or if we were working with an immigration firm, we would take that story, and that would be a way for us. We put that on a drip for a week, and that would be a way for us just to build relationship with the people who are on our list. We do a post about that on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and people would resonate with that because someone would be like, that's me. I'm in Colorado and I'm from Africa. The locations would be different, but the sentiment stays the same. And here's what this also does. What I was hearing when you were talking about that, and you said, they said, go back to school, get a student visa. Okay, that's a creative immigration attorney, right? It's not like, okay, well, we're just going to check the box and file the form and do the thing. No, now we're getting to know that this attorney has a brain, has a brand. And so we're more apt to go after that person because they feel like a friend, or we're more comfortable with them because we've gotten emails from them. We've gotten messages from them, and now we feel connected.
Yeah. Well, and also her husband died, you know, so she has to navigate grief.
That too.
And planning his funeral, you know, they've lost all their income. Hopefully if she had some sort of, you know, with a job like he had, of course she had life insurance, but, you know, and then on top of that, I'm getting deported and I have no place to go.
So think if you were an immigration attorney, right? And this applies not just to immigration attorneys, but it applies to really everyone. Where in your business can you draw the line between the different types of clients that you serve? So that immigration attorney served your friend, right? Who was a mom handling this tragic situation. But I'm sure that that firm that helped her also did employment immigration. And they probably did naturalization. Mm-hmm. And they probably also helped people after they went through that process, then get their green card. So if I was that law firm, I would use that story probably in my individual immigration marketing, but I probably wouldn't use that in my employment when I'm working with companies because that doesn't have a basis.
Well, I'm not sure though, because they were both not American, working for an American company and living in the United States. So, and I'm going to make a very generous assumption that it was his company that helped her find this lawyer. That's a very generous assumption. But I mean, if he's in an industry where he's living in Malaysia with his family for 20 years or 10, 15 years or however long it was, that is a company that's global and large, right? So I'm going to assume that the corporation helped her manage all that. I could be wrong.
You would know better than I would.
I just met her. She wasn't a friend. She was somebody I sat next to in a class, right?
Yeah.
But
so my aim there was to address that strategically, that story makes more sense on the personal side.
Agreed.
On the corporate side.
Agreed. But on the corporate side, it could make a little bit of sense because what ifs? If you're a multinational conglomerate and you have employees all over the world and you're bringing them to different parts of the world from different countries, you need to have an immigration attorney on your side who can manage every aspect of what that might look like, including the death of an employee.
But if we could think about that. So, okay, if I was a big thing in marketing is like, why do I care? Right? Like, go read the magazine. Why do I care?
Agreed.
Want something in it.
Yeah,
so
agreed.
For the corporate side of marketing, why would the company care about helping a widow? I know it sounds brash, and that's not
that's
me.
That's terrible.
But I'm speaking from the marketing perspective. Why would the company care? The employee has passed. Why do we care about the family? Yes, we should care about the family. But if I'm the company, right? If I'm a law firm and I'm marketing to, say, 1,000 different companies, I'm going to find a different story. I'm going to find a story where this guy was, arrested for something bad, but he was a great technical engineer and we still got him in the country and we were able to overlook some of those things, maybe some of those criminal charges, because he was so talented in computer software and he wanted to work for, some company in Silicon Valley and our firm handled that, right? That's better as a corporate story because it's like, well, if I'm a company and I want to bring someone who has issue, right, then that applies to us. So
yeah.
Zooming out, when we're looking at edutainment, we want a story that really illustrates how we're an expert and how we can help some of those issues for a potential client. And so breaking down the different types of clients that you serve allows you to be like, okay, well, this story helps my people in this channel, and this story helps these people in that channel. And so we can communicate with them, meet them where they're at, and provide that value.
I see your point. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I see your point. And that's the beauty of different perspectives and diversity is you can have different viewpoints and, a blend of the answers is usually the best solution, right? I don't know. Okay. I love it when I ask this question to people who are in the world of marketing, because the answers always fascinate me. But it's a question I ask everybody on the show. So what is your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
My favorite marketing tip, tool, or technique? Well, could it be sales or does it have to be squarely in marketing?
Well, sales is part of the marketing umbrella.
Okay. So when I approach sales, which most people don't like, or they feel is slimy, or they're nervous about making the great pitch or the great offer, I approach sales from a place of service. And I do that. I encourage clients to do that when we're crafting their campaigns, whether it's creative or communication or any of that. We're serving them in a way that serves them. We're not looking at it for getting the sale. Because if we're coming from a place of service, one, we're not so attached and doing the selling, we don't seem desperate or sleazy, or if we're going into a sales conversation, what is the goal of that? It's to close them. And to close them is to make the sale, do what it takes, walk the mile with them to get the sale. And although that's fine for some people, if you're an expert in what you do, if you're a service-based professional, selling someone from a place of service is going to have them feel excited to work with you, energized about the strategy you just put forward, and like anticipating what that's going to be like with you. Because we all like to be sold to. Nobody likes to be sold to, but we all like to buy. So we want to be a companion with them in that relationship. And really, it's not about us, right? Like whether you're selling legal services or marketing or, anything, I don't treat it from the place of me getting a new client or for the agency, getting an influx of cash. I see it from how is that client benefiting? Like, what are they getting from that? And when I approach it from that way, and when my clients approach it from that way, we see better conversions, easier conversions, and it's just a nicer process because we're not all tense and anxious during that way.
Well, it's when the marketing that you provide for your client is solution-based. It's all a win-win-win-win-win. Positive, you know, service. That was a very good answer. Thank you. It's always fascinating to find out what professional marketers, how they answer that. So earlier today, I was in a networking meeting and the web designer in our group asked the copywriter in the group what her average rate is for a 5-page website, to write the copy for a 5-page website. And her answer was brilliant. It's like, I used to have a rate card and I don't anymore because every single job is unique. And so I really have a conversation and then I price it based on the conversation that I had with the potential client. And the web designer was just like, fair enough. You know, but you know, that was a potential partnership that the web designer and the copywriter would work together. And so she was just curious how to add the copywriter's service into her package, I think is the where she was coming from. But it was a really interesting because also the web designer is like, fair enough, I'm kind of the same way, you know. But it's true, not everything is the same. You could say, I want a 5-page website, but if you're an attorney, that 5-page website looks so much different than the 5-page website for a marketing agency.
Or think about a 5-page website for an e-com
store.
That's very different, very different.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just a good answer. And then you said what you said. And it's like, oh, well, there you have it. You know, it's just icing on the cake for that conversation because it was a brilliant conversation. It was really good. And I love when things like that happen because I love to see I'm a connector. I'm a master connector. I love connecting people. And when I saw that conversation happening, it was like sparks. Yes, there's magic about to happen here because they're on the same page now. Right. I love it.
Love it.
I love it. So is there anything you want to chat about that I haven't asked you?
Well, we should definitely chat about online brands, online persona. Like, what is your personal brand, right? Like, as a entrepreneur, we all know who Elon Musk is, and we all know who Richard Branson is, and we all know who Mel Robbins is. But does everyone know who you are? And if not, how are we helping to get them to know who you are, right? The right people. So when we're talking about an online brand or your online presence, we're looking at a few different things. And so no matter what business someone's in, if it's a service-based business, I look at our method of brand, market, grow. So it's the BMG method and all of our clients use that. And it's this idea that before you can go sell, which is marketing, you have to have a brand. People have to know who you are, right? Like if you're ever walking down the aisle in Whole Foods and you have all those like, what are they? The mat, you know, like you get your bag and then you put the number on it, like the mass bins of, I don't know, Frosted Flakes and almonds and all of this stuff. And so if you were going down there, you would never buy Oreos out of that container, right? You would never buy, Cheez-Its. Not that I eat any of those things, but they're brands that are coming to mind. I would never buy Cheez-Its out of one of those big things. Why? Because Oreos and Cheez-Its are brands and they're in a package, right? But I'll go to those bins and buy almonds. I'll go to those bins and buy peanuts because there's no brand of peanuts. Yes, there are brands who sell peanuts, but when I think of peanuts, maybe I do think of one big brand, but Oreos is set on its own. Cheez-Its is set on its own. So you kind of get the sentiment of what I'm sharing there.
Yeah.
And the same is true for you, for me, and for everyone listening to this podcast, is that they are in competition with other people like them. And so if you just want to be another peanut in the crowd, that's great. You're going to get generic pricing. You're going to get bulk pricing. You're going to get commoditized. But if we can take who you are and build your personal brand, build credibility, get you in the press, get media talking about you, right? Like, let's get you on TV. Let's get you in publications that are well established and that your target market reads. Let's position you as an authority, as an expert in what you do. Now we're no longer buying peanuts. Now we're buying Oreos, and they have a mint version, and they have a unicorn version. And I think years ago they had a Lady Gaga monster version of Oreo, right? It's packaged.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has put a label on that so that as consumers, as individuals, we know what that is. The same as your personal brand. If I just said, you know, Bob, we don't know who Bob is, but if we can say Bob is the owner of a dealership and he does this, and he's also a fisher,
a fisherman, and now we start knowing who Bob is, right? Oh, he used to be in the army, and now we've got a good idea. There's a package around Bob. But if we just said Bob, we don't know who that is. So we help our clients establish some of that, if they don't have it already, within the brand section of what we do. We've got those three pillars, and that's usually our first one, because before we're going to go spend ad money and try to sell you as a peanut, let's figure out who you are. Let's create your brand. Let's position you as an expert. And now we've got a much more attractive product to put on the shelf.
Can we talk about how important it is to be authentic with that personal brand though?
For sure.
I love sharing this story because 20 years ago, there was this marketing person. She was a marketing guru and she had this streak of pink in her hair. And within a year or two of her becoming famous, every other marketing person had a pink streak in their hair or a blue streak in their hair. And they just all wanted to copy her personal brand. And that was so inauthentic, says the woman wearing the pink wig. But people who know my story know why I wear the pink wig, right? Because I don't have any hair, you know? So let's talk about making sure that your brand, your personal brand is authentic.
What questions do you have within that? I mean, there's so many places we could go to explore.
I mean, do you color your hair to make yourself stand out if that's not who you really are? I mean, people were doing it just because they wanted people to notice them.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of being authentic in that way, we want to shine a light on the best places of you, right? Like imagine you're on stage, right? And that big light is on you. We want to do that to the facts and elements of your life that already exist. We're not really creating anything new. We're just shining a light on what is great. And so we all know that plants need light to grow. And so we're just going to grow those parts of you that already exist. So, I mean, if I can make myself the example, I have glasses on, my hair is probably just as high as the height of my forehead. You know, I've got a style of how I dress. I don't know, right? Like all of these things that make me who I am, right? I like to be a little cheeky. I like to be fun, but then I'm also going to tell you the hard truth and nothing but the truth. So all those things about me help you get a sense of who I am, right? I used to, years ago, before establishing Geek House as an agency, I would just do marketing as Leonard, right? I always had some consulting clients on the side. And so I actually used the shape of my hair as a logo. And I don't do that now because now I operate as the agency. But that was a way where I could put that logo really small on a piece of paper and they would know, oh, that was from Leonard.
Yeah.
Without having to name about it.
Yeah. And I'm sure that if you did it today, people who knew you then would recognize it. Oh, there is a woman that I know personally locally who ran for city council, and she colors her hair red. She has her hair is bright red. And so she did something similar. She had a bright red, just the hair. There might've been a chin with her logo, but it was just her bright red hair and a chin. And that was what she put on signs. And because it was easily recognizable. The problem with that is now she always has to have bright red hair.
I've seen that happen when people tie themselves so closely to a color. So I know someone and they really tied themselves to the color pink. And that's great. But every social post, every speaking engagement, every TV appearance, guess what color she has to be in?
Yeah.
Pink, because that's part of her brand.
Yeah. And pink doesn't stay in. It's pink. Pink is one of those colors that goes in and out of fashion.
It does. It does. So that's why working with someone like me, who's attuned to that type of thing, I would say, great. You love pink. Awesome. Let's have an accent of pink in whatever you wear, but let's not have that be your primary color. And as we're talking about authenticity, you know, it's really difficult to put up a face of something that's not true for a long period of time. So if we want to have a long-standing brand, we want to be able to do things and talk about things that are really natural to us because it will just come naturally versus having to create this whole nother show or personality.
Yeah, it's exhausting trying to be somebody who you are not.
So true.
It's exhausting. All right, time to wrap up. This is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
I am grateful that we live in the modern day that we do, because there's so much support for us entrepreneurs that are trying to build, trying to grow. And so we're all at different stages, and there's always another stage from wherever we're at, because there's endless levels to this game we call life. But I think if we were meeting, you know, 100 years ago, first of all, we wouldn't even be able to do this, right? We wouldn't even be able to meet. And so living in today's world, I'm so thankful that the online community and really just the entrepreneurial community at large exists.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Solely. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Leonard Shiner. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy.